Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going very well. I've started watching The Office again.
So oh, nice.
One episode every couple of days and getting my wife into it.
The UK office or the US office?
The US one. I always thought that was the... it's longer as well.
Yeah. No, you, I think, introduced me to the US office. I had no idea. And yeah, I think over time, the character development in the US office is definitely more interesting.
And I remember The Office because I have a dentist appointment later today.
Oh, nice. You just, you made a very, I would say, pop culture reference joke.
I don't know how many people get it, but we do. That's enough.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And, but what I do want to get today is to the bottom of the very interesting work of our guest, Mr. Milind Shinde. He's the founder and CEO of 88 Pictures, a very exciting boutique animation studio. Milind brings tons of experience with him in terms of, you know, operating and running an animation business. He formerly was associated with DreamWorks. He has, you know, worked on some very marquee projects, be it Shrek, Madagascar, Kung Fu Panda, the whole lot.
Yeah, no, it's obviously a sector which interests me as well, because I've, in my previous stint covering the media sector in Canada, I did look at some of these animation, children's content creators rather. So it's a very interesting interesting little niche in the wider content spectrum. So
so in this, we don't have to fake becoming the experts, right?
We can
do it.
Yeah.
We can do it.
We can sell that story.
Absolutely. No, then let's get started then. Hey Sharad, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm particularly excited about today's conversation because it ties in very closely with some of the work that I've done in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. We have with us Milind. Hey Milind, how's it going?
Hey, very nice to meet you guys. Yeah, so, it's going great. Going great. Looking forward for our interaction.
So Milind is the founder of 88 Pictures, a firm which provides end-to-end solutions in visual imagery, big into content, big into production of feature films and animation. Very excited to have you, Milind. And
Thank you.
So how did you end up in animation content, and how did 88 Pictures come into being? I think you have a background at DreamWorks, so we can see some logical flow there, but sort of what made you start something of your own?
It's not a logical
okay.
Flow, because I come from a hardcore engineering and management background.
Yeah.
I'm a technical engineer by profession, and
yeah.
You know, all this while we're doing, there was an artist in me, used to dabble into a lot of things that related to art, anything that related to creative aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And after my management, actually, one day I accidentally fell into this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody just called me for some kind of an interview for business development. I was working in UK at that point of time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to that place, it was an animation company. And then I saw, how this thing went. There was a lot of artsy vibe into that.
Mm-hmm.
And something was there that was calling me. And I thought, is this what I want to do? And then I went back and studied. This was back in 2005. Wanted to study about just, animation industry per se. It was a very niche sector back then. It was still a small niche industry as such, but very niche sector. And we were trying, those were very early days of trying to get computer graphics in India. And, because it is called computer graphics, everything was around the technology aspect of it. And then there is the creativity. And then I thought, what's the best way for me to, blend profession and passion? And that's how we started. I said, this is it. So I think this is my calling. And, I literally decided I have three other jobs in my hand.
Yeah.
And this is like a very uncharted territory. But I thought, let's just jump into that. And, I was working with that company, and then DreamWorks came to India. I was very fortunate to be part of that as a core committee, which was just setting up DreamWorks. And, DreamWorks is one of the top 10 places in the world to work for from a working culture organization perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But from an animation perspective, it is, the top two, three at Disney, DreamWorks are the companies that we talk about.
Yeah.
I was part of that core team and worked there for a long time. It was in Bangalore. They had set up an India unit, and I was there for 5 years. And when that was happening, so my we call it ourselves as a producer in that field, so which is like an operations manager, project manager. But you have end to end, you have to manage the product end to end. But all this product is creativity, so like a assembly line mechanism that one goods flows from one to another. But you gotta have a lot of creators and facilities to understand how that happens. And then end of the day, though machines are working, but it's a human, it's an artist that are working there. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with that. And, so I was managing the production and also responsible for a lot of business aspects. And then China thing happened. DreamWorks wanted to do something called as the China DreamWorks, which is Oriental DreamWorks. I was there part of the core team, just trying to set that up. And that was going for that went for 2-3 years. While that was happening, we were also trying, and DreamWorks wanted to get into television space, and they also trying to tie up with outside vendors to get the work. I was fortunately part of that team, just managing that work.
Yeah.
And while that was happening, and while I went from India to China, then I realized that how the world is looking at India as an industry, as an animation industry. And that gave me a really good perspective. And then I realized that it's a need gap analysis I did.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. The work comes from India because predominantly it is cheaper, faster, better. Because we have a vast talent pool, and then there's a significant cost advantage. That's why work comes.
Yeah.
However, there at DreamWorks, we were also doing the high-end work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, the patriotic person in me, desi person in me thought, why am I doing this? Why am I working outside? And, I don't want to be a part of the brain wave. Mm-hmm. I said, let me go back and then, try to set up this company. So the thought came up is a very neat gap, as I mentioned, where, mm-hmm. I think there's some entity needed which can address the need of the market, which are mid to high end work. Mm-hmm. And that's how ADA Pictures was formed. And then I just took a jump, first time entrepreneur, and I said, let's just do this.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, because my next question was supposed to be that was it purely a question of cost arbitrage that entire angle played, from the perspective of DreamWorks or from the perspective of any Western studio? But you also said that it was not just lower end work, it was actually in the middle and higher end of the value chain itself. So from a talent acquisition perspective, how was your experience? Obviously, we do know that India has a fairly rich talent pool when it comes to IT services, but animation, where there is a fair amount of creative input which goes in, that's a different beast altogether. So how was your experience there?
See, the first part of it, the work does come here because the talent is cheaper. Mm-hmm. But it's also the other thing that, because that kind of work comes, the talent work at that point of time was not exposed to a lot of high-end work, which requires a lot of artistic skills, a lot of high-end technology skills and things like that. But that talent exists here, though it was in a smaller chunk and spread out in different places. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to distinguish ourselves,
right,
by how do we stay as a studio which is slowly growing and just doing the marquee work.
Mm-hmm.
Now the marquee work requires to have that talent pool. And now going back to the second part, yes, you're right about it, that though it is looked at as a mass scale, but the kind of work we do or the kind of field this is, unfortunately, if one person can do a work, 10% cannot do it into 10 times.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the talent is a challenge. So what we have to do as a studio, we have to grow very organically. So we literally started with 40 people, and every day we kept growing from 40 to 400 plus today. Is that how do you take the talent and do the on-job kind of training and then take a transaction which are manageable?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, organically go. So we also have a training philosophy, which is train, untrain, retain kind of thing. So we pick up a talent from the market, and then we train them, or we untrain them first, actually,
yes,
for all the things that they've done, and then train them and keep retraining them. So that's a huge part of it. I would love to go from 400 to 2,000,
right.
But the unfortunate is not a volume play, and unfortunately, the talent challenges still exist.
But most of the folks you get, are they like lateral guys who already have experience? Or, I'm just wondering, maybe it's my ignorance, but, just in terms of sheer academic programs at a ground level, which actually looks at this particular field, is there a fair amount of, presence here in the academic world for curriculum, for training protocols, or it's mostly guys who have already worked in other studios, who already have something, plus it's on the job training that you kind of bring on to the table?
You know, the answer is yes and no, actually. There are programs and there are schools that are happening. That's a yes part. And the no part is not fully thought out. It's not. See, animation and art is, unfortunately, is not the mainstream educational focus in a lot of issues. It is changing. It has changed over the last few years. And my hope and pray to God that it's going to change over the next few years. So what some of the art school teaches is the basic art. But when this comes to computer graphics field, whether it is animation, live action, or games, then there are these private institutions which teaches that. So there are no mainstream institution that hardcore teaches you a graduation program into right. this. There have been efforts, again, like I said. So what you get is you get a fresh talent which has knowledge of a bit of everything.
Right.
And that that just like allows you to get the talent which is at least understand what is a computer graphic, and then you train them. So what we do is it's a combination of that. You know, for a higher end work, unfortunately, the pressure aspect doesn't work. But you know, you won't get the talent. So we do like a 20% of the pressure, and then 30% of the mid, and then remaining 50% is the mid experience talent that we have to source from the existing talent base that is available.
So
there are initiatives that are being planned across various bodies to raise the training initiative more.
Yeah.
But it's a longer process, and you know, today. It's most of our on-job training and experience that we rely on.
You know, one of the things with animated content is it travels very well, right? And it can be monetized effectively in multiple languages fairly quickly. Do you have any plans to sort of take 88 Pictures and create your own IPs as well, become like a mainstream studio, if you will? Or is it going to be a lot of it is going to be sort of helping other companies build their IPs and you sort of help them? Is how are you thinking about it over the long term?
Sure. It's a great question you ask, because it's a good time that you ask me this question, because you know, the business module that we have always planned was a combination of both.
Yeah.
The service module has to exist because, you know, predominantly our just the ecosystem and the industries is work around service model.
Yeah.
The second part of it, the idea also was the focus of setting 88 Pictures also to cater to two things, right? One is how do you get the high-end content done out of India? But at the same point of time, our country is growing. The need for content is growing.
Yeah.
Animation per se is not the content that everybody will watch, sure. Like West.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a father will watch and a grandfather will watch and the kid, 10-year-old kid will watch Kung Fu Panda, and mm-hmm. they all will enjoy. In here, it is still termed as what we call as a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
However, we try as OTT, we try with access to a lot of international broadcasting platform. It is changing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is only wise for us to be in this space.
Mm-hmm.
So what I call it as, you know, right now, I call it from IP, I'm calling it as a content creation.
Sure.
So, you know, because IP is a subject of, you know, whether you get it or you don't get it. And those rules keep changing. So we wanted to first set up our studio as a very strong, robust mechanism to do highest value chain content in animation as a service model.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to take a satisfaction that we have achieved that, because we are currently doing one of the most marquee, or couple of most marquee content in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have taken certain expertise of that, and leveraging that to have a content creation.
Okay.
So which is like the, you know, your so we do want to have, so we call it as a 40-60 module. So by 2025, we have 40% content creation studio and 60% service studio. Now the content creation is a journey, because if we have to, you know, animation is an unlimited shelf life,
mm-hmm.
and it appeals to the broader genre.
Yeah.
Right? And it can just, you know, we still watch Tom and Jerry, which was probably created 50 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Or similar to the Mickey Mouse. So what we are saying is, how can we create a property or a content that can travel globally?
Yeah.
Now, one thing is very clear, that we do want to focus India, because we do have a lot of art and history, and there are definitely stories that exist.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, the way of storytelling is different. So our effort now is how do you take Indian content and marry that with the Western sense of storytelling,
mm-hmm.
Western sense of visualization, and try to create the property which is semi-global. I'm still calling it semi-global because, you know, it will go to Asia, Pan-Asian countries, maybe some part of Europe, maybe some part of North America, and then eventually go to the global. So we have entered into that space. We do have a couple of projects in development. There's one project which is content creation for a project, but commission for a very big broadcasters or for a very big franchisee from North American market. We have got into that, and we didn't want to do it before because we were not ready.
Sure.
And I think over the next few years, we definitely see 88 Pictures as a content creation, content creator studio than just a garage shop or a work for hire.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? I mean, there's so much of monetization avenues that open up from merchandising and licensing and things like that you get. How have you sort of seen distribution change? Like, you know, in the Western, typically we saw from broadcast television were the primary buyers, and over time, like, I mean, Netflix is betting deep onto kids' content as well. And you have all these other SVOD operators. YouTube has its own thing going on. I don't know this company called Wildbrain, right? I mean, they focus a lot of AdWord. How do you see sort of distribution evolve, and especially in India, right? I mean, kids are still not the prime focus of all these Hotstar and Netflix that we have. And how do you sort of see it evolve, and, you know, interesting opportunities might open up, right?
Yeah. And see, that's the again. It's a very good question, because you know you do want to create stories as a filmmaker or as a creator, but you do want to see that as a marketable story. You do want to see as a story that can monetize in some aspect, whether it is just a story or whether it is, you know, product of that or monetization aspect in terms of merchandising and things like that. Now, one of the big there is still a big challenge around distribution in India right now, because it's a very capital intensive business, right? If you have to make a good content, there is a significant investment needs to be there. And if you want to create a stories that can reach a wider audience, then there is that significant. So then broadcaster has to pick up that cost. So what we are saying is, while we are Indian, we are very patriotic people. We have a job of telling this story to the world, but we want to create a global content. Because that distribution should happen in India as well as it should happen in Europe, as well as it should happen in Canada and North America, where at least the cost arbitrage point of view happens. When it comes to India, I think market is still opening up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the content, because you know, so again, you're watching the kids' content. So if you go to traditional broadcasters, you know, there's all revenues around your advertising,
right?
Around the commercial. So the slot or the kind of advertising spend happens for that space is not that significant. Hence, broadcasters are not able to put that money. Hence, creators do not get that money. Hence, our ability to create a larger than life content is limited.
Mm-hmm.
We are saying we don't want to compromise on a content. We want to create a content which will take the need of all the financial requirements.
Mm-hmm.
But because we are also creating with the noble intention of from India for India,
mm-hmm.
Then if the cost arbitrage gets taken care by international market, we would be able to pass on the benefit for the local market and then hence
mm-hmm.
do that. So here the ecosystem is still changing from around. When it comes to Netflix or Amazon or other perspective, India market is still predominantly focused right now from a live action point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My hope, and we are in discussion with this top two people like that for a couple of shows, is to take that product and show it to India.
Right.
Where that will make sense, and somebody will have to take that. And hence, slowly over the next few years, mm-hmm. the revenue opportunity will open up.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of the products that have done well in, on the global scale, like, you know, Inspector Gadget or Peppa Pig and all these, which have done really well in the Western kids, can that not be sort of dubbed, which is fairly straightforward and sort of tested in the Indian market? Like, is that... does that give you good insights, or do you think it has to be sort of an Indian-leaning content?
It's not. I mean, see, like, what is Indian-leaning, right? Like, so one of the big franchises we all talk about is Jungle Book.
Yeah.
I look at it as an Indian property.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying, like, it has to have an Indian name there.
Yeah.
Like, you have a guy who's probably in some villages of Kerala, let's say, example, right? And you have a tiger, you have a snake, and suddenly there's a story, but a Western had to write the story, and everybody loves it.
Yeah.
It's a billion-dollar revenue-making story. Yeah. And I'm talking, when I say Indian, I mean that.
Yeah, right.
I think that's what we need to, and will 88 Pictures, Million will be able to write this? No, the answer is not. But can we conceive those properties and have somebody like Rudyard Kipling or some guys of that honor help us curate that property for a world platform? Now, coming back to Peppa Pig and those kind of things, I always give this example, right? What makes a 10-year-old kid in India cry? And what makes a 10-year-old kid in US drive is very different.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
The businessman, the emotional personing tells me that I need to tell a story that 10-year-old kid in India needs to feel emotional. I will say emotional rather than cry.
Mm.
I'm saying I want to do a reverse integration. If I can make a 10-year-old kid in US make emotional with the content, Indian kid is definitely going to feel emotional.
Okay.
So we have to build that kind of a sensibility. Now, coming back to Peppa Pig, again, these are success stories,
yeah.
right? And there are many like that. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
You know, because consumption or the reach or things like that. There are successful properties such as, you know, Mighty Beam and yeah. there are a few. But, you know, if you start talking, then there is 1, 2, 3, 4 and this ends.
Yeah. Yeah. And how has YouTube changed the landscape, though? Just because it's such short form content.
See, it's a very interesting and you know at a point of time we thought YouTube will change the world, right?
Yeah.
And then because it's a tech play, and you know we are all into tech play. What is today may not work for tomorrow, or what you envisage for tomorrow may not work today, or may not even work tomorrow. So, at a point of time, YouTube is great. It's still doing that, but from a YouTube business model, what has happened is because it's a free, there's a limit that you can have for what kind of a content you can put there, and then suddenly there are premiums versus freemiums, right? The premiums yeah. are like of Netflix and Apple and Hulu, that, you know, like from a lot of local. So suddenly the distinguish had changed because there you are able to curate and control the properties. Let's say I'm the audience, and if I have to do Netflix, I am able to only see curated and created content, whereas Netflix is all free.
Yeah.
Depends on the business cycle that you want to be in. Like if we have some property, we just want to make it, like there are 2-3 ways, right? If I have a property, I just want to make it viral and then go to bigger channel.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube is the way. But again, it's a risky business model kind of thing. If you have, and it's a genre, right? In our space, you have, you know, the under 13 and you have preschoolers and then, so it depends on what you want. If you have to create a nursery rhyme project, which mm-hmm. unfortunately will not have a lot of investment, then you want to look at
mm-hmm.
YouTube as a fun. YouTube is a good media to get a lot of eyeballs and free advertising. And yeah. of course, you can put a lot of money to get that out there. But I look at it as a, you know, the way, the kind of content we want to stay in, unfortunately, YouTube will not work for us. You have to go to premium to get that premium aspect for the content.
Right.
And then maybe there can be byproducts eventually can come into YouTube just to get more eyeballs and publicity.
You know, you had briefly talked about the service module within 88 Pictures, and then you specifically said that, you know, there's that entire high value component mm-hmm. of that service module. I mean, mm-hmm. just for our benefit and also for the benefit of the listeners, okay. like how do you demarcate it internally, right? I mean, in terms of what is the high value, quote unquote, part of the work? I mean, because it's pretty much, you know, there is a kind of intermixing of technology as well as storytelling. Right, and I'm assuming like in any kind of a service delivery, there is a demarcation between repeat, monotonized, commoditized work and higher value at work. So, but how does it translate in the animation world?
See, it's a Amitabh Bachchan movie versus some other guy movie, right?
Right.
See, that's the demarcation. Like one of the big property that we do is by a director, Guillermo del Toro, who is a very world famous guy, who did Pacific Rim, Maze, Hellboy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
A couple of years ago, he won Oscar for, it's a double Oscar, in fact, for a director and for the movie called Shape of Water, right? So Guillermo had his first project called Troll Hunters 3 once. Now, that's the first time he got into television. He got into animation space and, you know, he did this project it was a DreamWorks project with Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our first project. And there's a trilogy called, you know, the three projects, Trollhunters and Three Below and Wizard. And then finally, there was a movie called Rise of Titan, which became number one on Netflix.
Right.
Now, these are high content because those kind of people are attached. Right. And their expectation of the content in terms of quality of animation, in terms of quality of lighting, in terms of quality of visuals is very high.
Yeah.
So what happens is the artistic value that has to put into this system and then the technology demand that are needed to create that kind of a product mm-hmm. are very high. Hence, mm-hmm. they are high revenue, but they will be high intense work where you need a lot of skilled talent to do that.
Right.
Which is, you know, then there is a studio investment we have to do in terms of training, in terms of R&D, in terms of all the efforts that and a lot of thought process that goes into that. Fortunately, all our leadership team comes from that feature kind of an experience.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that is how we demand high value content where, you know, I give an example, right? Like if you have to build a 500-seater studio can make, for arithmetic sense, can make a $2 million review, can also make $20 million review, can also make $40 million
review. Right.
So it's where you want to do that. And then that has just a human capital investment in terms of training, in terms of, you know, developing the aesthetic value, storytelling value, or is also, being able to appreciate and understand their content. So that's what we find out. That's how when I say high end content, I mean by that.
Yeah. Right, and you know, it's very interesting. I'm actually like a subscriber to, like you're talking about YouTube. I subscribe to this channel called Corridor Crew, who do a lot of reviews and commentary on animation content. So they kind of obviously, you know, it gives a more, I would say, layman's perspective. So it's something that I can probably digest more. And they keep on talking about, you know, the changes in technology, right? I mean, there was a time when, you were looking at things like complete CGI environments. And then, you know, gradually we're looking at like shows like The Mandalorian, where you're getting into like virtual sets. Then, you know, how faces or hair or fibers, you know, how these things slowly started, you know, becoming more and more ultra-realistic. What do you think is the next, you know, wave in terms of technology? Where are those shifts kind of pointing towards? And I'm guessing that there's a lot of catch up, which is all the time happening, right, with studios to kind of, you know, look at what is the latest trend or what is the latest, capital intensive that it might be. What is the latest skill set that needs to be on the table? Where do you see heading towards?
Nobody has seen the future. But one thing we know that, you know, back in the days, we used to take pride in a huge, thick box color television.
Right.
And now today, the media has gone to a smaller phone, which is offering like, you know, 4K HD and this kind of thing. Right. At the same point of time, I remember as a kid, you used to go and, you know, just set up time to watch one Ramayana at 11:30, and then that was the only thing. And today it has changed, and it's all a tech play, right? Look at all the OTT is all tech play. Like, you know, suddenly viewers are commanding that. So from an animation perspective, the tech has changed. You know, today also there is this Unreal part of it, which is the, Mandalorian and virtual production is done. So suddenly you are able to do a lot of content real time.
Yeah.
You know, so we have this huge assembly line mechanism how to do that. And there are certain things that are changing, but still there are certain limitations on that engine. Right. And every year it keeps changing. There was one technology 2-3 years ago was VR, right? And everybody thought that is going to change the world. And, right. And but unfortunately, it is not as it is not. I mean, it's a very, very revolutionizing technique. And even we played a lot into that. And but it didn't work out. So I think, see, the computer graphics is a technique. Though we call it as creative and everything, there are artists who are supposed to come. It's a pure technique. I mean, you have to be very agile to adapt something like that. So what we are doing as 88 Pictures, you know, we are saying we are slave to technology, but we are drivers of technology.
Right.
So when I say slave is a happy slave, we are saying, you know what, we want to adapt to the next tech that is coming up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we are also constantly looking for that. Like even in the software part of it, there are different avenues that we can do. And like the real time technology. So we did that. You are recipient of the first mega grant which Epic runs, and we did a film onto that. So what's going to happen 5 years from now? Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you know, we call ourselves a technocrat, which are into the artistic field, but we are not the tech player. So we are always wanting and looking for what is that next thing will come up. The way content is getting created is changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to definitely change. The bigger thing is the way the content is going to consume is changed.
Sure.
You know, like from a 3-hour movie, it's gone to 90 minutes movie, it's gone to 20 minutes. And today, you know, also there are mini movies of 2 minutes and 3 minutes. So audience's ability to see that. So it is always less is more, but you have to give more in less.
Yep. Yeah.
And how can that change is there? So the long story short is the tools to create the visuals will change. We just have to change that. But I think by the storytelling aspect will remain same. Right. So we have to just be those technocrats and artists that are able to be on the right side of, you know, adopt that tech and then
How do you, we see like a lot of these ed tech platforms as well increasingly embrace like gamification, right? There is that element of kids learning through games and animated games and like that. Is sort of gamification something that, or creating content pivoted around games, is that something you see or you have a bullish view on? Because I would suspect that it's much more scalable as well, and it's sort of quasi unscripted.
We have just launched a company called 88 Games, which is a subsidiary of 88. So we have launched a first game called Krishna Legends, which mm-hmm. is on the mobile platform right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we are developing the first console gaming. So gaming is an extension of this concept, right? Mm-hmm. As a business avenue. Second part is just India, as you know, in the pandemic, the maximum amount of gaming download happens in India. So I'm saying, so as a business opportunity, that is there, right? See, again, I go back to my storytelling. There are contents from here I want to show it to the world, which is what we are doing. Like, Krishna Legend is that. The second game is also about that. Now, the third part is gamification. I think that's a great, great, that's a great thing you said, because everything is going to be around gamification. You know, everybody wants, like, look at in our life today, everybody wants instant gratification. You know, you put a Facebook post and you want to see how many likes it got. You put an Instagram post. So I call it as an instant gratification. And that is only going to happen in the game, which is more interactive and a gamification way of content. So even internally, a lot of our technology we are trying to do, like a review system, we are trying to do gamification. But I feel the social media, entertainment, and the games,
mm-hmm.
and there are people talking about that. They all will come together to have a content which is gamified.
Yeah.
So the way of watching content, which is went to the previous question, it is going to change that. You know, you want to be part of the story where you are also able to drive the story. You know, there is also, you are also able to see, oh, what if this happens, but this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the story and the content will have to define with a tech way that it gives the viewer the options to also define how you play.
Yeah.
And at the same point of time, there is a lot of instant gratification of things that you do.
Yeah.
So I definitely see that the gamification of the content is going to happen. Now, coming back to EdTech, I think it's a technology extension, right? Like, yeah. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I would not lie. And I take an automobile as an elective. And, you know, the internal combustion engine, was the biggest thing. And I remember they used to take us to this one shop, and there was a big engine, real engine. And we had to study that and research and do a lot of drawings. I could not figure out until the end of my engineering how exactly this two-stroke and four-stroke app was working out. And I wouldn't lie, I was a very bright student, but I did not understand.
Mm-hmm.
And today, with this gamification, it's possible. You can go inside, you can see it, you can stop, you can, and this is just so amazing. So I do feel as an EdTech, I think if they are taking the maximum use of technology, but there will be a debate at a point of time whether, you know, you want to go back to the traditional schools or you just want to stare at the screen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
And, not the right guy to answer that. I mean, I have mixed views about it, but I think it will be an amalgamation of the traditional education system, use of the technology that you have, and then we call it something on a net thing.
Yeah, right.
No, this is obviously super fascinating. I have one, I would say, non-formal question here. If you have any recommendations for, you know, which are the movies, which you think are iconic, or animation plays, which you think changed the industry, which kind of brought in unique inflection points, what would, you know, can you share a few names which you really appreciated and admired as projects?
Sure. I mean, of course. The one of the reasons I got into this field is, you know, because there's always a kid in all of us. And animation is one genre. Like, I give this example, right? This is my first slide even in business presentation, that, you know, we live in so much of a realistic world, but there is a kid, or there is a person in each, all of us wants to go into imagination, wants to go. So, you know, you see, where do you see where the father of a 8-foot giant panda is a goose?
Mm-hmm.
Like a goose, right? And that happens in the movie called Kung Fu Panda.
Right.
Where Agi is actually the father of a big giant panda. And the big giant panda, who cannot even move, becomes the Kung Fu Panda, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another example I gave is about a really, really dark really ugly guy called Ogre, which is a Shrek. Mm-hmm. And he has a friend called Donkey, and Donkey speaks.
Right.
They have an uncanny relationship.
Right.
And which is, you know, your Shrek franchise. Yeah. And then you have this movie called Ratatouille.
Right, yeah.
Where, you know, there's a and the message it gives is that anybody can cook. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens to this? Some of these movies gives a very universal message mm-hmm. about what you want to do. So, you know, you pick up any of the top five DreamWorks movie, any of the top five Disney movies, they give you the message, which mm-hmm. are all real life messages.
Right.
In a very fantastic storytelling form, and you relate because they are either to animals, they are either to creatures that you never imagine. They are through you know, different storytelling formats that lets you immerse into the you know, world. So Ratatouille is why my favorite movie, because, you know, that's when I thought of a very simple middle class person from a humble family, having a lot of rebellious view that I want to go to India, I want to do this, I want to make my country feel proud, I think mm-hmm. the talent exists, I want to create an international brand. And, you know, take it from India, go to like Canada and US and do a reverse integration. And I was always thinking, how do I do this? Because we are allowed to dream. We are allowed to dream our culture. But we are also given a lot of do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
So we are in a way afraid of dreaming, right? Mm-hmm. So when I watched this movie, that made an impact on my mind. Right. And it says that anybody can cook. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was like, why can't I do this?
Right.
You know, why really I can't do this?
Yeah.
And that had a lot of impact on my mind. And these are the stories that leaves a lot of thinking to you, but in a way that they're very lighthearted.
Yeah.
And that's what I always thank God that how this animation happened to me. Because, you know, I call myself part of the storytelling, that in a world full of a lot of challenges that we have, we almost have a job to take people on that 90-minute, 20-minute,
right.
or 1-hour journey,
yeah.
where they're able to forget, enjoy, but also learn something.
Right. Yeah.
Right. How's the...
So it's injustice if I tell you some names,
yeah.
but, you know, I would tell you, like, Kung Fu Panda is the another thing. You know, the guy gets all the odds and becomes that.
Yeah.
Still stay humble. Still a simple guy, and right. still you relate to it.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. And how, you know, what is, I'm sure, I think you guys raised some money from a VC, but how is the sort of VC or the investment climate around such a business? What do you see? And, you know, what is your sort of plans in the future? Is it to sort of scale and just make the team bigger and get more projects? Is that sort of the way you're thinking about long-term growth?
See, there are like, you know, there are 2-3 aspects now, organic and inorganic growth. So our field is a capital intensive. And unfortunately, you know, in India, there have not been big successful Indian stories.
Yeah.
Which have been there for a long time. You know, unfortunately, it has been up. It's like it's a typical scenario of, you know, birth, growth, maturity and decline. So when I wanted to do this, and I was working on this like business plan for the last 10 years, and even when I was not ready, one of the big thing was, you know, you cannot play without money, right? Very, very, very important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when we did this, I did this entire, you know, Dog and Pony Show types kind of thing to raise money. To find the right partner was important, to understand the field, to understand. So we did raise a small seed funding from private equity players, and we in fact had a line of funding, but we stopped at that. You know, mm-hmm. because taking money is easy, justifying is the most difficult part. Mm-hmm. So we only took a part of that. And when I kept using this word high end, that if you do well, it pays well.
Yeah.
So then we wanted to do that and make a very profitable, sustainable entity.
Right.
And just work that for 5 years. So now also we are talking to some of the peer outlets now after 5 years, because I had a prototype to showcase that you do that to justify investors, and you are able to, because our field is a capital intensive field. If you don't have money, you should not even get into this business.
Sure. Yeah.
You could be great businessman. If you don't understand creativity, don't get into it. You could be a great creative artist. If you don't understand business, don't even get into that.
Yeah.
So what we have done successfully, we have proved that prototype, and we are self-sufficient at this point of time. But our goal is the 2025 vision, which is becoming a top 10 boutique shop in the world. And I say boutique is, you know, you are known for certain things, you do it in certain ways.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about scale. I'm not talking about value, but we are talking about value. To do that, where we want to do reverse integration. We are planning to go outside India and either set up in, you know, North America or Canada, where we are able to take expertise of some talent who lives there, mm-hmm. you know, which will help us for the next growth to become an international company. Our goal is to become that international.
Yeah.
For that, we would be looking at raising money probably next year. So, fortunately, the goal I had was, can we see first 5 years? Well, good. Unfortunately, even with pandemic, we were fine. And can I see next 5 years as an organic growth, right? Like year on year, certain growth project. But the answer is yes, I can see next 5 years.
Yeah.
Now, if you just do that, then it will have some challenges of weather and things. But the ambitious target that we have to become that studios in the world, which are content creator and also as well as service, we would be going into that round, you know, probably next year or so. I mean, you know, the best time to raise money, you guys would know more than me, is that when you don't need it, right? Right now, thankfully, we don't need it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have ambitious plans, and I'm just trying to get our firm feet on the ground, make sure business is secure for next 4 years. And then I think we are in that phase. So we will be going into that scouting in the next few months.
That's very interesting. I know. Thank you so much for your time. I wish you all the best. And we'll obviously, we have been keeping track of 88 Pictures. We'll continue to do that going forward. And, you know, looking forward to hear greater and greater things from you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And thank you for, you know, it's a pleasure always talking to different people. And we'll continue to be in touch.
Absolutely. So this was fun, Sharad.
Yeah.
And we'll be back soon. This is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran.
Signing off.